Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. At this time, we would like to welcome everyone to Raia Drogasil conference call to discuss its results for the second quarter of 2013. The audio for this conference is being broadcast simultaneously through the internet in the website www.raiadrogasil.com.br/IR. In that address, you will also find the slideshow presentation available for download. We inform that all participants will only be able to listen to the conference during the company's presentation. After the company's remarks are over, there will be a Q&A period. At that time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this conference call, please press *0. Before proceeding, let us mention that forward-looking statements are being made under the safe harbor of the Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1996. Forward-looking statements are based on the beliefs and assumptions of Raia Drogasil management and on information currently available to the company. Forward-looking statements are not guarantees of performance. They involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions because they relate to future events and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of Raia Drogasil and could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. Today with us are Mr. Marcelo Posada, CEO, and Mr. Eugenio Distagotis, Investor Relations and Corporate Planning Vice President, and Gabriel Rosenberg, IR and Corporate Planning Director. Now I'll turn the conference over to Mr. Eugenio Distagotis. Sir, you may begin your conference.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the second quarter earnings call of Raia Drogasil. We ended the quarter with 906 stores in operation. In this quarter, we opened 25 new stores, and we also closed 10 stores. We achieved a gross revenue of 1.6 billion in the quarter, 16.6% of growth over the same period in the previous year, and a same-store sales growth of 10.2%. Our gross margin corresponded to 27% of gross revenues, a 1.1% margin decrease over the previous year. We reached an EBITDA of 103.5 million. Our EBITDA grew 3.2% over the previous year, and it corresponded to a margin of 6.5%, a 0.8 percentage point margin contraction over the previous year. And finally, we posted net income of 58.6 million, which corresponded to 3.7% of net margin in line with the previous year. On page 4, I'd like to talk about our store development program. We opened in the quarter a total of 25 stores, and we closed 10 stores. We are in the middle of a portfolio optimization program in which we have already closed 14 stores in the year, and we expect that by year end, we'll probably have closed something like 20 to 25 stores. This is a specific program aimed at eliminating redundant stores and increasing our productivity. And this is not a store closure pace that is likely to go forward beyond this year. Our historic closure rate has been 5 stores a year. So I would say in the future, about 10 stores at most, being closed per year. But this year, this is a deliberate program, and it's something of our service. In addition to the 10 stores closed, we have also suspended 5 stores that are being prepared for rebranding. So they're temporarily closed and they will reopen relatively soon. When you look at our store portfolio, 35.9% of our stores are still undergoing maturity. So this is slightly less green than we had in the previous quarter, but still one of the greenest quarters in terms of store portfolio that we have seen in the company. So this is great news as far as momentum for future growth, but certainly this increases pressures on our results because, I mean, these stores, they start with a lot of pre-operation expenses, then they operate for a couple of months, losing money, and after they break even, then they start contributing to the total company profitability. So I think looking forward, this is great, but when you look in our current numbers, this is certainly a source of pressure. On page 5, we can see that we have opened so far 61 new stores in the year versus only 35 in the same period of the previous year. So we are taking this year's program much faster than we did last year. Over the last 12 months, We have already opened 127 stores, so we're fully on pace for the 130 stores. That is the guidance that we have for this year. We have already all the contracts already signed for this year. So our program is absolutely on track. And again, when you compare 61 recently opened stores to 35 of the same period of last year, this is a source of pressure that I was referring to in our numbers. On page 6, we ended the quarter with 906 stores in operation, not considering the suspended ones. Out of these stores, 456 are higher stores, 450 are Drogasil, so it's almost even right now. And within Drogasil, we have 6 stores that are under the Farmaville brand. Farmaville is a sub-brand of Drogasil, so we count as part of Drogasil, but it's a different format, it's a pilot format. This is something that we're still testing, but something that looks very promising and that we're excited with. And maybe, as we reach next year, this can turn from a pilot into a new strategy. Talking about market shares, I think the main highlight of the quarter has been Goiás. Well, we have gained 2 percentage points of market share in Goiás by acquiring 26 stores from Santa Marta. These stores are already up and going, and they have already increased share by 2 percentage points. Another highlight of the quarter has been Rio de Janeiro, where we increased our share from 4.8 to 5.6%. And then the new markets. We reached in Santa Catarina already 4% of market share. We reached in Mato Grosso in pretty much a year, 3.4% of market share. We reached in Bahia 2%. We reach in Mato Grosso Sul 6.3. So I think it's a great performance in new markets, but of course we have had pressures in a couple markets. São Paulo specifically, we lost 1%, 1 percentage point of share in São Paulo after a long period of growth. Currently, one of our brands is performing very well. The other brand has proven weaker this year. We are working, we identify what are the factors that may underline a weaker performance than what we expected, and we're acting upon it. So this is something, a very important message. I think we are in a difficult year for the economy, for the country. I think retailers have felt the pressure. We may have felt some of the pressure, but we are not getting comfortable with that. I mean, we're trying to exhaust any possible internal bottlenecks to unlock before we can think of what the crisis can or not do to a business. So we are always focusing internally. I think we lost the momentum in São Paulo in the beginning of the year, and I think we are on our pace to recover. Then in Brasilia, the federal district, we lost 1.2 percentage points of share, but here, it's exactly the fact that we haven't opened any stores for the last 2 years, so of course that if you don't grow, you get diluted. So I think this is part of life, and as we resume growing in the Distrito Federal probably next year, I think we'll see Distrito Federal growing once again. And then when you look for the whole country, we remain in line with last year with 9% market share. This is IMS data. IMS data, when you look 1 year versus another, it's good data. When you look short-term trends, it's generally not useful because this is not exactly demand. This is more selling from wholesalers to drugstores. This is not selling price. This is factory price. So there are a lot of limitations on the data. When you look into Abrafarma information that we don't publish, but we have, we gain market share in Abrafarma. Abrafarma grew 12% in the first semester of the year, and we grew something like 14% in the first semester. So we're gaining share in Abrafarma. In IMS, we are stable, and in both, we see that we lost some share in São Paulo, and we are on our way to recover that. On page 7, breaking down our growth, we enjoyed 16.6% of total revenue growth. It's important to mention here that as we have closed and suspended a lot of stores, if you exclude from the basis the closed and suspended stores, we would have grown 18.1%. The reason I refer to this number is to show that there's a significant gap between same-store sales growth, which was 10.2%, and what would be comparable total sales growth, 18.1, not considering closed. So this is to show that this gap is exactly the new stores, and we're very happy with how our expansion program is showing up. If you only consider the gap from 16.6 to 10.2, you can get the wrong impression that the new stores are not doing well. Well, the fact is that as we are closing so many stores, this is something that limits our growth. But this is not our new stores are not to blame for, and the closures are. And I think it's good because we're losing revenues, but we're improving our bottom line. And finally, our mature stores have grown 5.7%. We have seen in this quarter a favorable calendar effect of 0.7 percentage points versus last year. So if you take out the positive calendar effect, we would have seen mature stores growing by 5%. This is not the level we are used to. This is not the level we want to see. But when you look around at what other retailers are posting, I mean, we cannot say that this is not a reasonable number. I think it's a reasonable number, even though it's below our expectations, and it's below what we have done historically. And we are acting a lot internally to do everything we can to get back on track as fast as possible with our growth program. As we enter the third quarter, we saw a weak July, especially because of the weather. We have seen the coldest weather of the last 50 years in the second half of July. But then August, we're seeing an amazing beginning of the month. So it's too early to call. It's 1 week. But I mean, if this week proves to be the number for August, that would be a number we'll be very happy about. So overall, I would expect for the third quarter a similar trend from the previous quarter. And then as we reach the fourth quarter, then we have a much weaker comp base. And then I think we'll see our figures getting back on track. Not necessarily because they're improving, but because the last year's comp base is weaker. But so when we talk about revenue growth, we have always to look at what comp base we're talking about. On page 8, we're discussing our sales mix. The highlight of the quarter was OTC. We saw almost 20% of growth in over-the-counter medicines. They grew 40 basis points, their participation in our sales mix. So this is a very good performance. We have we have cold weather in the late fall in Brazil, and this is something that helped us in the quarter. Hygiene for Soccer has also proved solid with 17.3% of growth, gained 0.2 percentage points of share of our product mix versus the same period of the previous year. And generics have been almost constant, a slight improvement over the previous year. And then since the total cannot go beyond 100, if something is growing, something has to go down. And branded is going down. It was the weakest category of the quarter for us. On page 9, we talk about gross margins. We experienced in this quarter a gross margin loss of 1.1 percentage points when compared to the previous years. The first thing to consider here is that the figure of the second quarter of 2012 was inflated by late negotiations, meaning that we concluded our merger in November of 2011. Already at the beginning of last year, we started negotiating with suppliers, and these supplier negotiations they were only concluded in the second quarter. So we booked in the second quarter of last year trade allowances that were related to the first quarter, but they hadn't been negotiated on time to be booked in the first quarter. So the 28.1% comp gains of the second quarter of last year should have been 0.3% lower than that. So this is an effect on the comp gains. And then on this quarter, we have two impacts here. 0.4 percentage points from our tax situation. We have an increased tax burden, and this is something that we will solve still within the year so that we can start next year with our margin back on track as far as the sales tax pressure is concerned. And finally, we implemented in this quarter a change in purchasing strategy, especially on generics, on which a huge load of trading allowances that came off invoice was incorporated to the invoice price. So economically, nothing happens because the replenishment cost is the same that we had before. But under the average cost method, what happens is that When we stop buying with trade allowances, I mean, the trade allowances, they cease to exist immediately. And even though we have now a lower replenishment cost, that replenishment cost is yet to be incorporated to the average cost of goods. So we expect that already in the next quarter, we should see our margin get back on track and this one-time effect seems to exist. And it's important to explain the reasons that led us to implement this change. The first thing is that this kind of purchasing, in which you have a lot of trade allowances in generics, it brings tremendous volatility to our gross margin, because in months when you buy more, you used to generate more trade allowances. When we reduced inventories, we generated less trade allowances. And so this volatility is something that will cease to exist because we are incorporating the trade allowances in the cost of goods sold. So it will no longer be related to our purchasing volume. So the benefits are stability, margin stability. This is very important. The second thing is that collecting these trade allowances is never as easy as it looks like. Unfortunately, our suppliers, they don't pay our trade allowances on a timely basis as we do with our invoices to them. So this is always a big effort collecting this money. The money is never on risk, but we have always delays that pressure our cash situation. So by incorporating the invoice, the collection delays will no longer exist. And finally, what will happen is that we will be able to reduce inventories without punishment to our margin. That's something very important, not only to work with lower cash cycles, but also to gain leverage on our suppliers, because our suppliers, they learn the trick. So they know that we must buy every quarter to maintain trade allowances cost. And now we can see if we have a lot of inventories, we can stop buying for 1, 2, 3 months as much as we can, and this will put tremendous pressures on them. And if they have sales targets to meet, this means that they'll have to sell cheaper for us to buy. So this restores a purchasing leverage that we kind of lost because of this dependence on trade allowance. So I think it's a price to be paid, but it will make for a much healthier company going forward. And the reality is that we don't disregard the short term, but our variable of optimization is not the quarter. It's 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. And I think we're doing whatever it takes to get the company where we want and to have a stronger company for the next years to come. So, and I think this adjustment is part of that transition. In terms of cash cycle, we recorded a 6-day cash cycle reduction over the previous year. This was all driven by inventory reductions, and we'll keep reducing inventories through this year. And another thing is that as our generic inventories are getting down and generics have higher payment terms than the rest of the merchandise, we're no longer generating accounts payable for generics for the time being. So our days of supply is kind of pressured. When our inventories get where we want and we resume buying generics on a normalized basis, we expect the days of suppliers to get up and our cash cycle to reduce further. So this is a big focus for us this year in the second semester, is getting cash cycle down and generating cash this year. This is what we want to do, and we're doing all it takes. On page 10, talking about operating expenses, overall, we reached an expense dilution of 30 basis points when you compare to last year. So 20.6% total expenses versus 20.9%. The biggest reduction was in general and administrative expenses. We achieved a reduction of 0.8 percentage points. An important part of this reduction, 0.4 to 0.5, was in variable compensation allowance. As our numbers this year, in terms of profitability, are lower than we expected, and they're lower than the compensation targets we established, we are adjusting accordingly our compensation allowance. So this is a kind of an offset for the weaker numbers that we are posting. In sales expenses, even though we increased 50 basis points when you compare to the second quarter of last year, if you compare to the peak of the fourth quarter of last year, we're already getting down, and this is very good. Comparing to the second quarter of last year, we had part of the excess pressure is structural, especially the 0.2 percentage point of rental increase. And then there are more transitory factors, like 0.2 percentage point in new store pressure. We opened 61 stores in this first semester versus something like half that in the beginning of the same period of last year. So, of course, we have higher pressure from new stores. And then as we also opened a new DC in the fourth quarter of last year, then you see pressure 0.2 in the fourth quarter. But now as we are growing and we have started dilution, this is 0.1 percentage of point of pressure over the previous year. So our expenses are getting down from the fourth quarter of last year, but we are still higher, our sales expenses are still higher than what we had at the same period of the previous year. So our EBITDA represented 6.5% of gross revenues, a margin pressure of 0.8%. This margin pressure was happened especially in our gross margin that got down by 1.1 and then was partially offset by expense improvement in 0.3%. Another important thing to mention here is that the government introduced a provisional measure in the end of last year that reduced our social charges starting on April. The problem is that that provisional measure failed to be voted on time and expired. So we got the benefit of lower social charges on labor in April and May, but then in June, our social charges got back to normal. Where we are now is that we are negotiating with authorities, especially with representatives, to get our, not only us company, us as a sector, our trade associations are negotiating with authorities to try to get us back on the reduction of trade allowances. We're doing our part. I mean, there are chances for that to happen, but it's absolutely uncertain at this point in time. So we are not counting with that for the second semester. This is a 0.5 percentage point expense pressure, an improvement we had, and now it looks uncertain, so we are not counting with that. We are looking internally wherever we can to try to reduce expenses and try to offset that pressure partially or totally. So, as of now, it's difficult to predict what is the trend for the second semester. Of course, that this is looking to be a pressure year without the reduction on social charge. If we get the reduction back, then I think the outlook certainly will be much better. But again, it all depends on how much expense we can control, and we are working internally pretty much as we speak. And finally here, to illustrate the impact of new stores on our profitability, if you consider the 845 stores that have been under operation since the end of December of last year, and these are the 864 stores that we had in December, less 19 stores that have been closed or suspended, these 845 stores, they have posted an EBITDA margin of 7.4%, instead of the 6.5 for the total portfolio. So it's very easy that, and we're not talking mature stores. We're talking mature stores plus mature stores open until the end of last year. So it gets very clear the kind of pressure that we get from the new stores. As we keep growing and we're at least 130 stores per year, we probably don't see our portfolio of stores maturing, and then we don't see the maturation potential back. We estimate that if we stop opening stores, our EBITDA margin would improve by 1.5 percentage points, something like 0.5 from tearing out pre-operation expenses, and then 1% of operating leverage from maturation of stores. The day we stop opening stores, we'll see that whole benefit back. If our store opening decreases, progressively we see that back. If we keep growing at the same pace, that improvement gets postponed for the future. But at some point, it will have to happen. This is a future value of an asset that is already fully invested for. So it's important understanding and considering that. Page 12, our depreciation expenses went up by 0.2 percentage points, and this is very simple. More investment means more expenses. Net financial expenses went up by 0.1. We had less cash in the second quarter than we had in the previous year, but we got a big benefit from the tax shield from goodwill amortization. So we pay 0.2% of our gross revenues in income taxes versus 1.3. So there's 1.1% improvement, which in the end made our adjusted net income stay constant over last year at 3.7% as it should be 13. Talking about non-recurring expenses, I know some investors and analysts take issue with non-recurring expenses. We are very we're very transparent and detailed in terms of opening what those expenses are, and we understand that you don't make an omelet without breaking eggs, and this is the breaking egg part. So consulting and legal expenses from closing and stock closures, for example, things absolutely related to our integration, and the main line of pressure has been the Farmacia Popular program. Every higher store got out of the program when we did the incorporation, and progressively we're getting those licenses back. In order to minimize disruption to our clients, we decided to subsidize the program ourselves. We know it's an important amount. It's 3.7 million this quarter. Last quarter was 5.7. So this account is going down as the stores are getting re-licensed. But this is something that we believe we have to do because in order to maintain our customers. Again, this is when we refer to our long-term focus. I mean, we are willing to take short-term sacrifices like this to have a better company in the middle and on the longer term. But as the stores are getting relaxed, this number is getting down. On page for cash generation, we had a total cash flow of negative 31 million in the quarter versus 1 million in the previous year. Even considering so 10 million better, even considering that we had 10 million more in capex being done. So as we open more stores, we're investing more. So 10 million more in investments. And when you look at our results from operations, we had 99.6 versus 95.2. So this led to a 10 million improvement in cash or less cash consumption in 10 million, even though we absorbed 10 million more in investments in the period. On page 16, I mean, our stock is down 15.3% over the end of last year. This is certainly lower than what the Bovespa is dropping. Bovespa has fallen by 22.2% in the same period. And even with this drop in our stock price, for whoever invested at the Drogasil IPO, we have posted an average annual return of 20.6%. And for whoever invested at a high IPO in the end of 2010, 26.6% of annual return. And this is only stock price return. We're not considering here dividends and interest on capital that have been paid along the way. I'll now pass to Marcelo for him to discuss the progress of our integration.
Hello, everyone. I think we have a lot of two slides for you, but it seems very important to highlight some points here. I believe this month we advanced some important points that can help us a lot in our next year results. One of these points is integration. We had a very important date for integration in the company. It will be September 1st. And this day we start to roll out a new system in Drogasil stores. This is very important because we start working with just one front end in the entire company. We also put together warehouse and stores in the same system. This is just the beginning of the rollout, and for sure we transform the whole company. It will help reduce costs, and because we have a lot of departments today which work with two systems, but it can be more costly in prices and customer loyalty. We are planning to reduce in the next 6 months the transition, and we know that it will be the future for this program can deliver for us a completely new company after these 6 months. The next slide, I will highlight some points that is linked with us right now. The store development. All the new store opening program is running as expected. We must open 100 stores this year. This is very important for the future growth and to keep the same number in the next year. We are preparing a brochure of contracts to help those maintain the same monthly number in the beginning of 2004. Why? Because in the beginning of the year, always we have a problem in open store in January, February, March. But this year, we can deliver for the customers for markets, new stores, outfits, and do right now. We have challenging in sales in the second semester. We believe that we close the year with the same similar revenues in average revenue first and second quarter also. Reduction in social charge that's really made, that Eugenio told for us right now, maybe it will be a challenging exchange for us, but we are negotiating the cover in the government right now how to keep it for us again. But you can increase the prices in some specific markets. If you work in price opportunities, improve your gross margin. Primary market drivers, leadership and product not just price increases. We put all the managing in focus on execution problems in the stores, try to reduce the oil in the stores, try to reduce the people in the stores, also try to save some money for us right now. We are working very, very close also in the inventory opportunities. Try to reduce the inventory and try to keep the number better as possible for the next year. We really believe that all these initiatives together will bring us a 2014 more profitable and rich growth. But our number one goal is finishing the integration.
Great. So before going to Q&A, something that I'd like to stress, I think on the last call we mentioned that there was so much work being done for the integration that was still below the waterline and that was not visible. And so the analogy that I used was of an iceberg. And to illustrate that further, we on page 17 we put an iceberg in place to discuss and explain all the effort that it takes for the system integration to go forward, as Marcelo mentioned. I mean, there's a lot of work that goes before the results are actually collected. So we start with file unification, and it's something that's absolutely crucial, like tax files, product files, and so on, mix alignment across distribution centers. We upgraded and adequated our purchasing and logistics systems. We completely rewrote our cost management system, improving that tremendously. We have already worked on pricing and sales system, and we're now finalizing the interfaces for the iceberg to emerge in the surface, and we really start seeing things to happen. So first we see distribution centers get implemented, then we see the stores being connected to distribution center and being served by that distribution center, and finally next year we'll change our point of sale system. The first store that will be rolled out on September 1st, this is a Drogasil store that will be served by a high distribution center, so at that point in time, we don't need the DC working. But then already, the next wave to happen still this year will be a full region with a distribution center, and then that will be absolutely the big proof for our systems then to roll out until we conclude the integration in the end of first quarter and latest end of second quarter of the next year. So this is a crucial moment for us. We believe that this will bring so many benefits to the company, economic benefits. This will restore the whole focus on productivity improvement and serving our consumers better. So this is something absolutely that we must do. And we offer number one, number two, and number three priorities, they're all the same, completing the integration. So with that, we go now to the Q&A.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star then one on your telephone keypad at this time. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press star two. Our first question comes from Guillermo Assis of Plural. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. So, Eugenio, I have actually two questions for you. I think regarding your footprint, as you mentioned in your presentation that you're gaining market share in some of your, markets, and you had flat or you lost a little bit in some other ones. I'd like to understand your strategy for the growth from here to the future. Like, and regarding the mix that you have in terms of tour guide view and Maya. I'd like to understand, how do you see the market share? If you see any opportunity of gaining more market share by introducing new brands to regions where you basically have only Raya or only Bruga View. And my understanding is that you're already trying to do that. And I'd like to understand that strategy. And the second thing about the closing of stores that you mentioned, of closing between 20 to 25 stores, I'd like to understand, where do you think that you have more opportunity to close stores, and how much gains would you get from closing these stores? Those are my questions. Thank you.
Jeremy, thanks for the questions. When you look at our growth program, this is a year that we focused on existing markets. So, the end of last year, we entered Bahia, Mato Grosso do Sul. 1 year before, we entered Santa Catarina. And this year, we are keeping to these two existing markets. And of course, we are further developing the recent markets. Next year, I think for sure we'll start advancing to new markets. But then it's important to clarify that not every new market is alike. And the best example that I give is the south of Brazil. Our entry into the south of Brazil is much, much, much tougher than it is in the northeast or in the Midwest. Santa Catarina, for example, and our entry is certainly being successful both in Santa Catarina and in Paraná and Rio Grande do Sul. We already see our stores in Santa Catarina growing a lot. We'll increase advertising and we'll focus a lot on new markets to further accelerate them. But we already see Santa Catarina stores trending to a very good revenue level. The problem is that in a very competitive market, we have invested so much in gross margins ever since we entered that state. Paraná is a step ahead of Santa Catarina. The stores are already very good in revenues. The margin is already one notch up for Santa Catarina, but that's also a market that we have investor prices, and we are progressively increasing our margins there. If you compare what we have done to those markets, to the Midwest and to the North, it's a completely different scenario. The competition is much, much softer on the Northeast and the Midwest. The tax burden within the state is much softer. So if you look at Bahia, Mato Grosso and Mato Grosso do Sul, our stores are progressing very, very well. We already have meaningful levels of revenues. The revenues point in a very interesting direction for when the maturation is complete. And our gross margin is already very reasonable. So this is not a kind of growing to the Northeast and Midwest. It's not the kind of growth where we press so much our profitability like we did in the South, even though the South is resolving itself and the South is advancing in the direction that we hope. And in terms of mix of stores, higher versus lower, we don't have any internal targets. One good thing about us is that we are completely dispassionate about our brands. Our decisions in terms of branding, when we open a store or when we rebrand a store, is absolutely technical. It's absolutely based on what is best for us in that scenario. So our priority for new market is to enter Drogazil. We believe Drogazil is a more universal brand than Raya. I think Raya is more upscale, and sometimes it carries its favorable pricing perception. So the whole priority for new markets is with Drogazil. But we have a lot of opportunities for both brands in existing markets. This year, we have shadowed the brand in Goiás as we bought 25 stores. Half of those stores that extend our presence to new neighborhoods, they were opened in Drogazil. And the second half of stores that were located in existing neighborhoods, we opened as Raya, and both brands are doing very well. So in Goiânia, it is a pilot for a two-brand scenario in a more recent market. It's been a successful pilot. So this may encourage us to shadow brands in more markets whenever we feel that the opportunity is no longer that big with the existing brand. So we'll focus with one brand, and when we need it's better for the brand to grow, from that point onwards, we can mirror brands. And that increases our total growth capacity in every market. So this is how we're thinking about. We're certainly on track for 130 this year. We are starting already on next year's program. We're putting 130 stores. We've been in a pipeline for the 130 of next year. We already have 21 stores signed for next year. More will come in the next few months. And with time, we also understand better what to do in Drogazil, if we have a program for Farmazil, sorry, or not. So I think progressively those things will get clear for us. We're starting to work on next year's program. We're starting internal discussions to validate the number of stores, to validate what we do or not at this point with Farmazil. So I think over the next months, maybe we can have news for the market. In terms of the closures, I think the main important is whenever we have unproductive hire or Drogazil stores close to another store. Because in those situations, not only we eliminate stores that are not profitable, but we can even allow an existing store to encourage some of the revenue. So that's always the best setting. In several instances, that's the case. I mean, in other instances, we are correcting either mistakes of the past or stores that with time were good at some point in the history, but then deteriorated. I mean, a store is a living system. So I remember that 1 or 2 years ago, we closed a higher store that had been open for almost 60 years. That doesn't mean that that store was a mistake. It means that the region deteriorated the start. So we have no prejudice about closing stores. And sometimes closing stores is just as good as opening store. You just have to be technical in terms of the criteria for closure, just as we are in terms of the criteria for opening.
Okay, that's good. That's very clear. Thank you again.
The next question comes from Richard Cathart of Espirito Santo. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Just one question on the market share loss in Sao Paulo. Could you just kind of explain in a bit more detail why you think you have lost market share? Is it the pricing? Is it the promotions? Is it the mix in stores? Bit more information on that would be helpful. Thank you.
Richard, thanks for the question. I mean, we have been gaining share in Sao Paulo for so long, I mean, almost quarter after quarter after quarter. And in fact, in this first quarter, we lost share. I mean, IMS shows that, and our pharma also shows. When you understand now how we're doing, what brand is doing much better than the other right now, and we're understanding all the bottlenecks to unlock growth for the brand that's not doing so well this year. So I think we are really basically to blame. I think in the beginning of the year, we had sometimes system discontinuities at stores. So we are looking at every possible bottleneck to fix the bottleneck and to put stores in place. If you consider the size of the share in Sao Paulo, we cannot losing 1% of share in Sao Paulo is very different from gaining 1% of share, I don't know, in Goiás or Rio or whatever. Sao Paulo is a much bigger market. So as a percentage of the total sales, 1% Sao Paulo is nothing compared to what it could be in other markets. So I think there's nothing new in Sao Paulo in terms of competitive scenario, especially in the metropolitan region. The metropolitan region of Sao Paulo is one of the calmer regions in the country. In the countryside, there are sometimes specific cities that may have new competitors entering. But I mean, that's part of life. I mean, we manage a portfolio of markets. Sometimes we need to put more effort and sometimes we need to invest more money on marketing in some market, but can always withdraw from another market that is performing well. I don't think Sao Paulo is any critical in terms of competition. That's certainly not a market where we need to invest in, not divesting in margin in Sao Paulo. But sometimes when Goiás is a market, we invest in margins and we withdraw margin from other markets to finance that. So competition varies by market and varies on the time. Sometimes we have more competition, but the thing is, with a portfolio of markets that we have, we can generally self-compensate and not necessarily defend ourselves when needed and not necessarily pressure markets. So this is one of the biggest assets we have, given our size and given the diversity of markets where we operate. And Sao Paulo, it's an outstanding market, both for us and to our main competitor, the Sao Paulo. We all have amazing stores, amazing locations, huge revenue per store, very healthy gross margins, and nobody plays funny games in Sao Paulo.
Great, thanks very much.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Matthew Pascal of ShareLink. Please go ahead.
Hi, Julian, how are you?
Hi, Matt, how are you?
Doing well. On the Portuguese call, I think you guys mentioned that it was likely that margins might be flat or even down this year. I know there are some social cost pressures and some pressures on your gross margin. I was hoping you could speak to that a little bit more. That's my first question, and I had a follow-up.
Thanks for the question. I mean, we have been working for the whole year under the assumption that we had a social charter, and that's something that was already a provisional measure, and then for city political leaders to take it, then I think we probably have a more constant margin scenario for the year. Without that, I think we may have pressures on the second semester, especially as we are also increasing our marketing investment. And again, when you invest marketing, you lose money in the beginning, and then you make money going forward. And our whole variable of optimization is not the quarter of this year, but going forward. So cutting marketing investment because we lost social charge reduction, for us it doesn't make any sense. But what we're looking at is really on operating expense reduction and efficiency that we can gain. So this is still a question mark because we're still working internally to assess the damage for not having social charge reduction as we expected and what we can do to mitigate or to offset that. So we're working without social charges. I think the scenario for the second semester is a scenario of pressure, but we have to have the company ready for a strong 2014. For me, this is much more important than what may or not happen in the second semester of the year. But again, we don't regard the quarter, and we do all we can to live in a different scenario than the one we prepared ourselves for.
Got it. That makes sense. And obviously, it's the right decision to invest for the future, even if it means the margins will be down this year. Just turning to the longer term, I know historically you guys have talked about potentially getting to a margin, somewhere between 7% and 8%, over the very long term. Now that there are these additional pressures from social costs and some incremental pressures on gross margin, I think both of those are around 40 or 50 basis points each, so that's about 100 basis points. Is it fair to say that your longer-term target for margin has come down to somewhere closer to 6 or 6.5 versus what you might have thought it would be a year or two ago?
No, man. Certainly, I don't believe in that. The first thing is that the gross margin, all the factors that we have in gross margin, the transitory factors. Next year, our gross margin will start cleaning off the ICMS tax issue, and this mitigation, this purchasing strategy we implemented this quarter and next quarter will be already done. So there is no pressure at all when you think longer term for the gross margin. And if you think that our normal gross margin already incorporates a lot of pricing investment in the south of Brazil, as our brand gets stronger on those markets, and certainly our market investment is part of the strategy, we can even see gross margin going up because those pricing pressures will cease to exist with time and will not necessarily require them to be reinvested in other regions. So I don't think the outlook in terms of gross margin is any different from what we expected. Another thing is that margin pressures, the main driver sometimes of margin pressures is revenues. For example, this year we're growing 2% less, 2% below what we expected. And 2% less revenues means 0.5 percentage points of less EBITDA margin. Just a 2% higher revenue would mean 2%, 0.5% additional EBITDA margin. So this has a lot to do with the shorter term revenue navigation. And for me, there is nothing here that points to a worse future than of course what we could see. For sure, having the lower social charges on taxes is better than not. So of course, if we have that, that's a benefit we can count on. But fundamentally, the main driver that we have going forward is maturation. If we stop growing, this is 50 basis points of immediate improvement just by taking out pre-operation expenses out of the system, and then 1% operating leverage at mature stores. And I don't think the story going forward is nothing different from the one you know.
Okay, thanks so much. Congratulations on the quarter.
Our next question comes from Irma Scars of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi, good afternoon. This is maybe a little bit more of a housekeeping question, but if we assume now that in the third quarter the payroll tax relief is not coming through and you have to make that reversal, or you basically have to put through the charges of, I think you mapped out about 9.4 million in payroll-related charges, one-off charges for potentially the third quarter. Should we think of this coming through the selling expense line, or to the extent that there's been shifts between the deductions from gross sales and to the selling expense line? And I know you make that adjustment in your adjusted P&L, but about that coming through, and would that be coming through in the third quarter? And then I have a second.
Irma, thanks for the question. In April and May, when we had lower social charges, our labor provisions were also adjusted down for the fact that within lower social charges regime, we'll have less future payments. So we reduced that. We completely separated in the second quarter, as you may recall, what was due to provisions accrued in the previous year and what was the part for this year. So the part of this year is helped a little bit in the current results, and the part related to previous years, it was, it was treated as a non-recurring revenue, so to speak. So if the social charges if we don't get back to the social charges reduction, we'll just undo what we need. So we will adjust whatever was accrued before this year. So the part of last year will be adjusted as non-recurring, and the part related to this year will be as part of the normal recurring profitability. If I'm not mistaken, I think the main sales line that refers would be sales expenses. But probably there's some part of G&A as well. But we probably can talk about this outside the call, and then I can confirm the information.
Okay, that's helpful. I just wanted to actually confirm whether this is not impacting the sales deductions line. Is that correct?
Irma, this is a very technical subject, but I suggest we talk outside of the call. Because for me to get messed up in a wrong answer, it's very easy. Subject like this, I want to avoid that.
Okay, no worries. No worries. I actually have another question, more really big picture and strategic. Your product on PharmaSale, it's interesting that you're here, that you're already rolling out six stores there. I'd be curious to understand how you think about this growth potential. I know you're still assessing the early feedback or the early results from these stores, but I'd be curious to understand how you're thinking about the store openings. Would that be incremental if you decide to go out and accelerate the rollout there in 2014? Would this be incremental on top of the 130 store opening that you're talking about, or is this something that that is potentially replacing some of the stores of the other two brands? Thanks.
Well, so let me first go to the longer term, and then we discuss what can or not happen to next year. If our economic hypothesis on the format is confirmed, then I think we are going in that direction. For me, looking longer term, there's a huge potential for PharmaZiu stores in Brazil. Huge, huge, huge. And then what I would expect is that on the shorter term, high-end Brazil stores would be the bulk of what we do, complemented by PharmaZiu. And then as time goes by, I think high-end Brazil will probably become progressively a lower portion of PharmaZiu, a higher portion of the total store openings. Because we can still double the number of the high-end Brazil, but beyond that, I think PharmaZiu has to do the trick. Concerning next year, we're still discussing internally and understanding where we go. I mean, PharmaZiu can either be a part of the 130, or if you feel comfortable, could come on top of the 130. I don't have an answer right now, but this is something that we are assessing before we put a formal guidance for next year. What I can tell you, we're not going to open anything below 130. So the 130, you can count on that. If PharmaZiu will be part of that, if PharmaZiu will be on top of that, time will tell, and you know whenever we have a definition, okay?
Great, looking forward to the guidance then.
Thank you.
There are There appears to be no further questions. I'll now turn the conference back to the company for their final remarks.
Well, thank you all for attending our conference call. We are very optimistic of the company on the longer term. I think the integration is our number one priority, number two priority, and number three priority. Nothing is more important than integration. There's so much value to be unlocked. Part is taking distraction out of the table. Another part is being more efficient in terms of not having duplicity of systems, not having inefficient file expenses and things like that. But then I think the main potential that we'll see from the integration is the exact reason that brought I and Drogazil together. When I and Drogazil merged, until the very day that we signed the merger agreement, we were competitors who knew each other outside out, outside in. We didn't have any market, neither for ourselves nor did we get to the market as far as synergies. What brought us together was the complementarity between I and Drogazil on an asset level and on a skill level. The understanding of what we can do by putting together the best of both worlds. And I think we'll see the best of both worlds when the system integration is behind us. And the impact, I think, is great, but it's very hard to quantify. We're talking about what better pricing can do. We're talking about what more more interesting promotional formats can do. We have our own PBM that manages several programs with several companies in Brazil, but these programs are either higher specific or Drogazil specific. For example, we have huge corporate consumers like General Motors, Fiat, Volkswagen, Ford, Scania, Natura, and so Embraer, and so on. And these programs are either served by Hire or by Drogazil. Itaú is a good example. We serve all Itaú employees in the region where Hire is, but we are not serving any employees in Brasilia, for example, or in Espírito Santo, for example. So whenever our systems are integrated, all these programs can be shared across both brands. I think this can be an accelerated growth. This can be better margin management. This can be a better shopping experience for the consumers. And this is huge, maybe, what matters. As I mentioned, if revenues grow 2% higher than expected, this is 0.5 EBITDA margin gain. If revenues are 2% low, this is 0.5 EBITDA margin loss. So nothing is more important than being productive at the point of sale, of delivering a better shopping experience to the consumer. And this is what will allow us to dilute expenses and to bring our margins to the level that we expect for the future. So thank you for your support. And this is a journey. This is a marathon and not a 100-meter sprint. Thank you very much.
The conference is now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.